On this third day of October 2019, from the Lucy Coleman Studio in Los Angeles, California, the country, I am a citizen of the United States of America, and I'm dwelling on this globe, God's good planet, Earth, the stuff of life. Wouldn't you know it? Once you think you're getting ahead and everything is going swell for you, then it happens. Life itself crashes in on you. You had a little money, the money's gone. You were planning on doing this, and then that happened. Well, that's my life, but I am so glad that I can spend some time with you. You know what? I am excited because I came across Dear Person's website. They are a retired police person. They are white. And she is a female, Reverend Karen Carlo, who has a PhD. I was reading her, I'm excited when I read through everything about her. The name of her website is Fixin' to Preach. That's what it's called. And she wrote an article called Dear White People about Bolton Jean forgiveness, justice, and cheap grace. And I just got through reading the article, and I'm on her website, and oh my God, I said, who is this marvelous person? Because she so reminds me of me. She so reminds me of me, and I am just overwhelmed by her words. Here she has another article, Our Pain is Not Unique. Another article, White Supremacy is Not the Gospel. Decolonializing Theological Education in West Africa. Oh, I love this. Let me read the article to you. All right, and as I read this to you, these are the words of the white female pastor that wrote this article about the Bolton Jean trial. This is what she says. Yesterday, we watched the sentencing of a white woman, a former cop, convicted of murdering a black man named Bolton Jean in his own apartment, unarmed, eating ice cream. She received the very minimal sentence of 10 years, following which the brother of the murder victim gave her a big hug and said that he forgave her. In other words, Bolton Jean's brother came up and hugged the murderous cop at the end of the trial. Having never walked in his shoes, I will not judge him, the white lady that's writing this article said. However, as a white woman, the one writing the article, also a former cop and Christian theologian, I will judge the way so many of us in the white community are so quick to applaud black people for forgiving white murderers. We did it following the Charleston 9, and here we do it again. Then she goes on. It's a very interesting article. She goes on and she says, we are quick to point to the way in which Jesus forgave his own killers, even as he suffered on the cross. And we hold that up as a model for victims to adhere to today. But wait a minute, she says, is that fair? As we usually do with Bible stories, we cast ourselves in the role of Jesus, but really white people in the U.S. are the Romans in this story? Now, this is interesting because I had been thinking about that for a couple of days when I think about the colonialization process of how we are meanly treated and how easily this is cast on us as some audacious thing that we do. We forgive white people automatically. She goes on and says, "We are the crucifiers, not the crucified, the defenders of brutal empire who perhaps feel a little guilty at the scene of yet another lynching taking place in our name. But as such, we hear, Father, forgive them as good news, even though we have killed Jesus and brutalized his people, we need not really fear hell. Even the victim himself does not hold us accountable. We are innocent. We did not know what we were doing. Good news, right?" And then she says, "Wrong." So she's writing the piece with a bit of candor, and I appreciate her for that. She's keeping it real. She had to be some policeman, really. Then she goes on and says, "Forgiveness without repentance is what the theologian Dietrich Bonhoeffer, quoting Adam Clayton Powell, called cheap grace." It's a good statement. It lets us believe that we are off the hook for our evil without demanding that any real change takes place on our part. She's right about that. In the case of the murder of Botham Jean, cheap grace let us white people maintain our sense of innocence and goodness without first facing up to the role we all play, knowingly or not, in maintaining systematic racism. She's correct when she says that. In this case, it allows us to avoid looking at the particularly brutal history of black men and white women. We don't have to think about the thousands of lynchings, the unjust crucifixions that happen in our country due to black men being unjustly accused of raping white women. We don't have to think about the way in which white women to this day are seen as fragile and innocent, practically, if they are to make themselves blonde, while black men are perceived as threatening and dangerous even when they are in their own homes eating ice cream. In other words, we do not need to see, let alone repent of our sins. She's speaking about white people, of course. But is this the gospel? Is that grace? And by grace, she means something to be highly favored. Then this white retired policewoman says, "No. Let's look at the Father forgive them scenario again." And this is what drew my attention to the article, because she's a theologue, like myself being a theologue, and now I'm curious to hear the way a white woman thinks about what Jesus said when he said on the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." That's what she was referring to earlier in the article. Jesus of Nazareth, who lived as an oppressed Jew under Roman occupation, is like many before him, being crucified as an enemy of the state. In other words, she has as a side note here, all of you are chomping at the bit to inform me that Jesus' crucifixion or lynching was non-political because he was dying for our sins. Need to hold off until you read some of my upcoming posts about the racist roots of Ansel, she calls it Ansel Maine substitutionary atonement theory. Now that's interesting, and I cannot wait to read when she produces that. I'll keep you folks here abreast, but you can go to her website yourself and read it for yourself. This is amazing. And then she says, all of you who likewise want to blame the Jews need a lesson in history of Christian anti-Semitism. Then she says, all of you who similarly want to say we are all equally guilty as sinners, regardless of race, need to read a history book. I have covered all of the loopholes. Have I covered all of the loopholes? That's a question that she's asking. If not, I will get back to them. Today we are talking history. So Jesus has been persecuted by Romans all of his life for preaching the good news for the impoverished and oppressed people of Rome. Now hangs on 1,000 crosses, which Dr. James Cone rightly identified as lynching trees, designed to support Roman supremacy. And I used to did not believe with Mr. Combs because I was a thorough dyed-in-the-wood reformist. And now I have to say I see exactly what he's writing about as a Christian. This is amazing to me that my mind at 75 would just now open up to these truths, which Dr. James Cone rightly identified as lynching trees designed to support Roman supremacy. Notice that in every one of the Passion narratives, he has very little to say to his oppressors, speaking about Jesus. At this point, he is done talking to them. Notice also that Jesus does not forgive them. He asks God to do so. Notice furthermore that he essentially writes them off as ignorant, for they know not what they do. She's right about that theologically, because if you know that particular part of scripture, which I know it thoroughly, this makes sense. Then she goes on to finish the article by saying, is that what we as white citizens of a white supremacist nation want for ourselves? Because she's writing as a white woman to the white people in the nation that she lives here in America. She says, will we be satisfied by cheap grace that comes from being written off as ignorant? Will that restore the humanity that we have lost to the false and demonic systems of racism and white supremacy? Will enforce, and it is enforce forgiveness coming from black victims of racist violence be enough to save our souls? No. I would say no. The mere fact that Botham's brother came up and hugged that woman that killed his brother, that doesn't take the guilt off. Then she says, I am going with no on this. I don't know about you, but I want more for myself, this white woman writes. When I see a white woman entrusted to protect and serve all people who nonetheless harbor racist ideas as evidenced by her text to co-workers who illegally entered a black man's castle, shot him in cold blood, told a nonsense story, played Goldilocks on the stand, and got away with the most minimum sentence, I want to do better than cling to the, but his brother forgave her, bless his heart defense. Last paragraph, she says, I want to hold her and I both accountable. Now, this is a white woman that I could sit down and have coffee with and appreciate. Man, her for the murder and me for whatever way I have, knowingly or not, contributed to the systemic racism that caused the murder. She's right, because it was systemic racism that caused that crazy little white woman to shoot that black man in his own apartment. She's so stupid, she know not what she do. She couldn't even find the right damn apartment. Then this writer says, that was my words. Then this writer says, I reject cheap grace. I need justice to be done. I need the gift of true repentance for my own sins of racism. I need real soul salvation. I refuse to be written off as one of those who did not know what he was doing. I am better than that, and so are you. Wow. What a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful writing. Oh my goodness. This woman is just a beautiful writer. And if you want to find out who she is, I told you already. I told you already who she is. And she has a lot of comments on that. But my goodness, the stuff of life, right? Well, I'm glad that the city of Dallas and whatnot is not burning up. A lot of people are happy that she did get caught. But the stuff of life, right? The stuff of life. I have to stop sleeping light covered in my bed. I hope I didn't get pneumonia or a bad cold, because it was cold last night and I just stayed in one place under the blankets. But the stuff of life, I had the plumber come by and he gave me the estimate. I signed it because I got a little money coming in 2 weeks and I shall be able to pay it all off of the card that I put it on. But my water heater was so old and the thing burst and a lot of stuff was damaged. So there it is. Thank goodness I'm drawing some money out of my house so that I could pay for it. The stuff of life. You never know what's going to hit you. You never know what's going to come your way. Mario's in Papua New Guinea. I hear from him now and then. He's doing okay, I guess. Helping the people of Papua. And I'm supposed to send him some money when his money comes in. And so that he can have a little bit more spending change there. His goals, some of his goals have been accomplished. Some has not been accomplished. And so I just thought that I'd share that. Man, I just love this article. Our pain is not unique. Yes. Let me see another article. Why I Stay Mad. She reminds me of my daughter. Let me see. No, I don't want to do that. The Energy Medicine Patch is revolutionizing pain relief for pro athletes. Now it's available to the public. Now, I should listen to this because I have a sciatic nerve problem.
Injuries, headaches, back problems. We all experience physical pain in our lives, and the majority of that pain is caused by one thing: inflammation. At Luminos, we've created a safe, all-natural pain relief patch that directly targets pain instantly with no side effects.
I had a brother-in-law come over and literally could not move. Could not pick up his kids.
That sounds like me.
I immediately gave him a patch, and I'm not kidding you, within 10 minutes, he felt total relief. Was picking his kids up and taking them to the car on their way home.
Through years of scientific innovation based in quantum physics, we've developed a revolutionary product that has changed the way we look at pain relief. It starts with a simple patch. We charge this patch with the energetic signatures of natural remedies known for centuries to reduce inflammation.
Remedies like Barnacle, B-Complex, Magnesium, Turmeric, Bioparin, Vitamin D, and literally hundreds more, all targeting the root cause of pain and all within a single patch. This entirely new technology is being used right now by the world's top athletes and sports doctors to help reduce inflammation, speed recovery, and maintain peak physical performance.
I've dealt with pain my entire life at a high level. And for the first time in my life, I found relief through Luminous patches.
It's completely safe, totally odorless, and produces absolutely no side effects.
Anybody that's dealing with pain, they have nothing to lose. There's no chemicals in these patches.
Now, let me address something here. If I get this thing, I expect this thing to work because I'm suffering from severe sciatica in the left leg. I mean, it is killing me. Keep talking, brothers.
And they've worked. I mean, I literally have seen the pain go away in my knees, my ankles, my lower back. I'm a big believer in them, and I'm looking forward to keep using them.
The revelation of this new technology has given us our mission to relieve pain with the power of nature and help people around the world regain their health, vitality, and happiness. In doing so, we've teamed up with doctors who are on the leading edge of this technology. They're using Luminous in real-life medical environments every day with astounding results.
My name is Sonia Broadlin. I'm the formulator and product development director here at Luminous. What we know about pain is a lot of it is directly related to inflammation. So what I do is I start by just looking at the basics. What areas need support to make that inflammation leave the body? To look even deeper, I look at other cultures and finding out what they've had.
I really don't know. I you know what? That's a stretch for me. That's going to be a stretch for me. So I'm going to leave that one alone. Hey, listen, I just want to remind you that the Stuff of Life is being recorded now as I'm speaking to you. I want you to listen to my normal behavior that I had on the website. And some of the emancipation was a good one. Nice Things Part 1 and 2. A lot of good stuff, right? Listen, go to my website and learn all that you can. What I want to do now is I want to go to YouTube and go to YouTubeNews.com and hear some of the news that is taking place all over the nation today and kind of listen to the news with you. Let me see. Nothing new on the news. Oh, wait a minute. Something happened.
Investigators are working to find out why a World War II era plane crashed at Connecticut's largest airport, killing at least seven people. The B-17 bomber was trying to make an emergency landing at Bradley International Airport after engine problems. 10 passengers and 3 crew members were on board. Chris Van Cleve is at the airport. Chris, what more do we know about the accident?
Well, good morning. This B-17 was a bit of a flying museum that was on a national tour. I'm going to step out of the way. I want you to look at this runway right back here. It's runway 6. The NTSB is going to be looking very closely at it because that's where the plane came down before it veered to the right, eventually hitting a building. We can pan over. You can see the tail of the plane is right next to a dump truck there in the shot. Now, there were 6 people on board who survived. 3 were critically hurt. 2 others on the ground, including a firefighter, were also injured.
Dark black smoke filled the Connecticut sky moments after the 75-year-old B-17 bomber crash-landed off the runway at Bradley Airport with 13 people on board.
I thought, boy, I hope it makes the airport.
Claire Palmer saw the plane moments before the crash.
It was sputtering and popping noise, and I thought, what's the matter with that engine?
Boeing 930-12, we'd like to return to the field. What's the reason for coming back? We've got number 4 engine. We'd like to return and blow it off.
Four-engine propeller-driven plane took off.
Man, that thing is just too damn old. They got a cartoon thing of it showing here. The plane was too old. They should have left it on the ground.
45 Wednesday morning. Just 5 minutes later, the pilots made that emergency call. And at 9:54, they landed short of the runway at Bradley and crashed into a nearby de-icing facility and maintenance building.
The left wing is broken off, and there are various pieces of the plane across the facility.
Jennifer Hamady is with the NTSB. Are you surprised people survived this crash?
This was a significant tragedy, and...
Yeah, she's surprised they survived the crash. You'd be surprised, too. Uh-huh. Hey, the Atlantic City Council speaks about what? Wonder what this is about. Listen to this one.
I'm not frank. I can't say whether he is going to resign or when, but eventually I see that it's a sentencing date, so eventually his term as mayor will expire, and at that point it'll be up to the Democratic Committee and City Council to see what the next steps are.
If he does not resign, you know, immediately or in the very near future, will you call for him to resign? Can you do anything? Can you take any action?
Well, let's be fair. This is fresh news. I'm not prepared to make any statement. I'm still information gathering myself. And at the appropriate time, you know, statements and possible actions will be considered.
Mm-hmm. With being a charity basketball team, what was your initial reaction hearing the initial exchange that he...
See, what he was accused of, it says here, Atlanta City Council President speaks after Mayor Frank Gilliam pled guilty in federal court on Thursday. And then somebody wrote and said, so at this, you have a criminal in office, but I have nothing to say about that. And then they're laughing out loud.
He was guilty. What about the whole situation? What's your reaction?
I mean, it's shock. I guess it was closure because people were always wondering, you know, what and when the proverbial shoe was going to drop. And, you know, just a little shock. But as I stated, I can't, you know, I'm not prepared to any statements or anything. Like I said, I'm just here, information gathering. And at the appropriate time, if he does resign, the law, you know, states that, you know, myself, the council president, will go in as mayor. And then it's up to the Democratic Committee to choose who the permanent mayor is.
Well, he smiled when
but
he
a timetable for when that might happen is not yet clear.
It's not yet clear. This is all still fresh. I'm going to go upstairs to the office and see what's next.
He's going to go upstairs and find out when is he going to get him a nice job. That's what he wants to do. See? He wants to know what's coming to him. Ooh, man, I'm telling you. Did you guys hear about the Chinese parade yesterday in Peking? Did you hear about that? Man, I am telling you. That was some parade. All those soldiers marching. Here we have an article that says 1,000 foreign troops participate in China's military parade. Can you believe that? Oh, look.
And representative teams of foreign troops will march past Tiananmen Rostrum. Never before has China invited foreign troops to join in the parade.
Wow, that's...
The Afghan representative team, led by Lieutenant Colonel Abdul Rahim.
Wow, this is neat.
Passing through now is the formation of Belarus. Leading the formation is Colonel Rasul Anatoly, a garrison commander.
Man. Peking has other countries marching in their national parade. This is amazing. Celebrating the 70th year of, and you know, they used to be America's enemy, the Chinese. Now the Chinese, I think, in many ways, is far greater than America today when it comes to organization.
Now the Cambodian soldiers.
Now they have Cambodian people here.
Vice Captain of the Honor Guard, please attend.
Man, President of China invited all these different countries to come and march in their military parade. Have we?
Here comes the Cuban Revolutionary Army.
Man, they got the Cuban
Lieutenant Colonel.
Man, looky here.
Rasa, Captain of the Honor Guard.
They got the Cubans marching in that thing. This is beautiful. They got all these other nations. They got a right to have their government just the way we have ours. Oh, people, I've changed on a lot of ideas. And these people are struggling to survive and to live. Look at that.
marching forward now is Egyptian formation.
Man,
Colonel Ahmad Abdelaziz,
they have the Egyptians marching.
Leads the formation,
and they have the president up on the podium looking at their own people march in a Chinese 70th year. My goodness. This is amazing.
The team of the Republic of Fiji military forces is led by Master Sergeant
the Republic of Fiji
Ballet Ratu from the Strategic Command.
Now you cannot help but to love the Chinese people. They have done. I didn't know this. And this internet is so. For 75-year-old men, this is where I get all my news. Trust me, people. Man, they got the president of the country up here, and this is shown on CCTV. It's funded by the whole part by the Chinese government. The Chinese got this thing, and they put this thing out over the air.
Right now is the formation from Kyrgyzstan led by Colonel Disakov Danyar.
Man, would you look at that. I heard that they had guys rehearsing for this thing for weeks in China, and they said that this parade was going to be something like you have never seen before. And it is.
This is a team of the Lao People's Army. It is led by Captain Han Bilifong.
Man, look at the Laotian people. Look at this. He invited.
Following behind is the formation from the Mexican Armed Forces. Lieutenant Colonel Jose Carlos Luna Loretta leads the formation.
This brings tears to my eyes, people. I see all these beautiful people marching to celebrate the freedom of a great nation.
This is the Mongolian formation. Lieutenant Colonel,
this is the Cambodians.
Karshadin is leading the troop.
My Lord. I never thought I'd live to see this day. I must make the screen huge. This is beautiful. Beautiful.
Pakistan Armed Forces Formation is led by Lieutenant Colonel Muhammad Tayyib.
It's like unbelievable. Look at them all dressed. I know you guys are listening to me at home, but the reason that I feel so good about this, when I was in the U.S. Army,
now is the Serbian Armed Forces, Major Marko Miljanović.
They were putting out all this spew about the North Vietnamese and communism and whatnot. And now to see these people from Europe, all over, marching in.
Colonel Maksumov Ihorn is leading the
and they didn't even advertise this, and I didn't hear about it on the U.S. thing. This is beautiful. This is beautiful. This is just beautiful, man.
This is the representative team of Vanuatu. Lieutenant Poma Avia from the Mobile Force is leading this formation. Yay!
Here comes the formation from Venezuela. Miguel Angel.
Man, you got Venezuela here.
Academy cadet.
Look at these soldiers. Everybody. This is amazing.
This just is the Russian formation. It is led by senior captain
Dmitry
Alexandrovich. There are 85 soldiers from the country's 154.
Look at this smart.
Independent regiment.
Look at this.
Putin is the Honor Guard Regiment, the Russian Armed Forces.
Yes.
The Honor Guards of this regiment also took part in Russia's
Why
victory
couldn't
day
the United States send someone? Look at them.
Marching Moscow's Red Square.
The representatives of veterans of the Red Army of the Soviet Union, their descendants also attending the commemoration. 70 years ago, many foreign soldiers and international friends fought along with China,
this
including
U.S.
Blind Tiger Commander Claire Chennault, Canadian doctor Norman Bethune, and Indian doctor Dwarkanath Kopis.
Man, what a parade. Amazing people.
Just imagine.
Oh, wait a minute.
Perfect
no,
small business
no,
that you
no.
can start.
Stop it. I am telling you, I can't stand these commercials. No, I wanted to move way up here. Wait a minute. It was so many of them. There we go. All right.
This is the Mongolian formation. Lieutenant Colonel Batbegel Karshadin is leading the troop.
I think I saw that.
May,
here we are.
The first to march into Moscow's Red Square.
You know what?
The representatives.
I was right. You know what? There is so much to see. And let me say this. Why couldn't the American news stations show this? Let me go back. Let me go back to the news channel. There we go. Why couldn't the American news stations show this? Wait a minute. I'm looking at another news story here. I mean, the American news is not showing anything newsworthy. Anything newsworthy. A knife attack in Paris. 4 police officers were murdered at knife point in Paris. Oh, my goodness. This is terrible. I didn't know this was this. Listen.
And news just coming in, 4 police officers have been killed in Paris. There's been a knife attack. 4 police officers have died in a knife attack at their headquarters by an assailant. And the assailant, we are told, has been shot dead.
Of course.
Now, according to media in France, and these are media reports that are just coming in, the assailant was also an administrative intelligence employee at the police headquarters. So we're still waiting for clarity whether he was a police officer, whether he was a source, what kind of an intelligence employee was.
People are going mad all over the world, I'm telling you. Stark raving mad all over the cotton picking world.
The French police reports seem to indicate that
let me listen
police
to some
officers have been
in
killed
another language.
In a knife attack inside the Paris police headquarters near Notre Dame. Reports the attacker also worked there. Ismail Rashid is with me now. What do we know about what happened?
Okay, this really is a moving situation happening in the centre of Paris as we speak. This was at Paris Police Headquarters, a building where you would expect is extremely secure. And that's why the news that's coming out that this potential perpetrator was someone that actually worked inside Paris Police Headquarters. What we are being told is that 4 police officers have died and then police officers shot this perpetrator. So in total, 5 deaths in Paris this afternoon. Just some quotes coming to BFM TV, one of the local TV sources there, saying the alleged perpetrator started in his office before continuing onto the premises of the prefecture. The assailant was an administrative colleague who had more than 20 years in office. Now, it's not immediately clear how far the assailant got inside. We are aware that there are potentially some injuries as well, Kay. And the motives of the attack is something that we're just not aware of at the minute. So the information is very sparse. There's also other sources saying that now the Paris Prime Minister, the French Prime Minister, Edouard Philippe, is at the scene along with the Interior for Ministry and also Emmanuel Macron making his way down to central Paris as well. I think we can see some pictures now obviously emergency services attending to the scene. There will be a lot of rush in central Paris now after this attack. We know that Paris has been frequent to some attacks in recent years, and we don't know the motive for this attack. But what we are hearing is that this was someone who worked inside Paris police headquarters. They were armed with a knife. They attacked officers inside the police headquarters, killing at least four police officers before he was then fatally shot. And they are words from a French police union to a local TV. This building is actually located near Notre Dame, so Notre Dame Cathedral, so just across the street from there. So that just shows you how central, really, we are talking here. It's believed that four police officers faced those fatal wounds, and then the officer shot the attacker in a situation that appears to be self-defense. They're the words coming from police union.
Obviously self-defense. You just can't let a madman continuously kill your people in front of you. What was happening on the news last night?
Breaking news tonight, the deadly plane crash, the World War II era bomber going down in flames shortly after takeoff. Multiple people on board killed and injured, another hurt on the ground. The horrifying images and what investigators just revealed. Also breaking, outrage at the courthouse, anger erupting after former officer Amber Geiger is sentenced for the murder of her unarmed neighbor, and the emotional moment in court.
I don't know if this is possible, but can I give her a hug, please?
The victim's brother and Geiger embracing. President Trump lashing out, his profane attack.
Now let's deal with the embracing, all right? The plane crash, that's unfortunate. The embracing. The family are Christians, like me. I would have done the same thing if I were a family member. They're going through that because of what my faith and my religion teaches me. But I wouldn't have done it that way. I wouldn't have done it that way. That didn't send the right message, I don't think, to black people. When somebody white does something horribly wrong to anyone, you don't just jump up and I'll forgive you and so it's all forgiven. No, it's not forgiven. You killed an individual, and that would be like me if I were participating in anything where an individual died around me or in my home. I would take personal responsibility for that. What else is on the news?
Attack after Democrats threatened the White House with new subpoenas in the impeachment inquiry.
Democrats want to impeach a president. Man, the guy is, I'm just putting it in the real. He's created more jobs than the president before him. Obama didn't create too much of anything. But I'll leave Trump alone. What else are they talking about?
Also, Vladimir Putin, what he is saying about his conversations with the president and his answer to our question, the joke he made about interfering in 2020 that some are taking very seriously. The health scare for Bernie Sanders, the 2020 hopeful hospitalized for a heart procedure, campaign events canceled, the reaction from rivals, and what Sanders just tweeted.
Let me give you my reaction. He's too old. He's not going to win. He's a socialist. We got to get back up on our feet through working. An American worker just came to my house. All right? And an American worker contracted for me to do some work through him. Let's see if the American worker can get it done. Also
tonight, security fears on the eve of the Joker movie opening. Theaters on alert after the warning of a potential attack. One major chain telling parents this movie is not for kids. And the price you pay.
Wait a minute. If the movie's not for kids and the law is allowing Hollywood to put this crap out, why are you trying to save what's left of a childish population that is going to be hell-bent from the day they go to the first grade until they grow up into adulthood? You've ruined them, and now you're trying to caution that kids shouldn't see the movie.
How our spending habits may be fueling record ATM fees.
Well, okay.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Wow.
Good evening, everyone. A rare chance to fly aboard a World War II era bomber ended in a fiery disaster.
Well, somebody lost their lives because they wanted to take that rare chance.
Sightseers aboard a vintage plane in Connecticut today. At least seven people were killed when the crew of the civilian-owned plane tried to make an emergency return to the busy Hartford Airport. The plane careening off the runway and exploding in flames. Ron Allen is there tonight.
Minutes after takeoff, a deadly and fiery crash. The black smoke visible for miles.
There's a massive fire at one of the runways over here.
A B-17 World War II era bomber, part of a vintage plane exhibition offering flights to the public, crashed and slid off the runway at Bradley International Airport.
That's what happened. No. Somebody asked me, you want to go to an African country and preach the gospel and show these young preachers how to... I said, no, you go by yourself. Not going anywhere. Absolutely anywhere, my friend. I don't want to hear any more nightly
news. Four police officers have been killed in a knife attack inside the...
Yeah, we understand. Now, Hong Kong, that's another story. When is that story going to end? Because Hong Kong is living in turmoil. Look at this.
Beijing calls this Hong Kong's worst crisis in the more than two decades since the 1997 handover. Hong Kong's protesters have repeatedly used dangerous tools to attack police. These actions constitute seriously violent crimes and are starting to show signs of terrorism. The protesters would probably agree the city's in crisis, but for very different reasons.
Sending troops or using emergency ordinance is not the way out. We will continue our fight no matter how they arrest and prosecute us.
Such extensive disruptions are pushing our city, the city we all love, and many of us helped to build, to the verge of a very dangerous situation.
That was Carrie Lam, but Carrie Lam doesn't have any answers towards the situation. I don't think that too much of anybody has any answers towards that. The world is caving in on itself. It's like, my God, what's going on here? So they have interesting stories, and here's another who's behind.
The protests in Hong Kong have been going on for over 2 months amid increasing violence. How did we get here? What triggered them? And why are they turning chaotic?
That's another article on
YouTube that they have. I mean, they're answering everything. Without a television, I am staying informed on what's going on. Well, listen, it has been a great day. I could play news clips for the rest of the day, but I have work to do. I got bills to pay. I got to set up everything for my hot water heater being fixed up. And oh, everything has to, oh man, it's a mess. When you've been in a house as long as I've been in mine, I just thank God for this. I thank God that He's always left me a little money in the pot. And I'm going to use that money to take care of my bills. If it's the last thing I do. Thank you so much for coming to my website and for loving me enough to listen to the old man. I pray that my sciatica gets better. But I'm having to face it. I'm 75 and things are rough these days. Okay? God bless you. And I'll talk to you real soon.